The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You know what happens when you get older? I figured it out. The older I get, the greater I used to be. At age 20, I worried about what others thought of me. You know, I became very caught up in that, the social image. At age 40, I really stopped caring what others thought of me. And at age 60, I discovered they hadn't been thinking about me much at all. Good to have you here on The Doctor Is In, where we think about you. This is Look Back Friday, where we think about you twice. The original call that came in anywhere between, say, a month and 6 months ago. And then I comment on it again. Multiple reasons why I would do that. The prime reason is I just want to say more. I didn't get a chance to talk enough. That's the prime reason. But I can sound altruistic and charitable by saying things like, well, I think there were matters I didn't get a chance to delve into to help out a little more. Might have been a term used that I'd like to explain. A direction I wished to go in, but I thought the caller didn't want to go in that direction. Yeah, those all sound so concerning, and they may be true. But you really get down to it, as St. Thomas Aquinas said, motive, follow the self. Yeah, I just didn't get a chance to talk enough. So we'll get to some of these calls. A little, a wide variety of calls up there. Quite different. So we got trans, we got phobias, we got a broken up marriage because of religion, and then we got the number one relationship, generational friction, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. So we will get to that. It's been some weeks now where the Paris Olympics Commission put out an apology. Well, yeah, that's not really what it was. It would have been probably better if they'd have said nothing. They basically said, we're sorry if anybody was offended by what we did. See, the problem is you, dear people. If you were upset about that, then they're sorry for your upset. You're the one who is wrong because you got upset, you see. Dr. Ray, that's not what they meant. They apologized. Oh, really? Well, they also made a mistake in the opening ceremonies of calling North Korea South Korea. And they said, we deeply apologize for that. Okay, so they flat out deeply apologize for mislabeling the country. But on the other hand, in that opening ceremony, that just basically said to Christians, not only do you mean nothing to us, but we are in your face. And I got to thinking, what if I went to confession like that? Bless me, Father. Mistakes were made. And I would like to apologize. If God took something I said or did out of context and became offended by it, I am sorry for his oversensitivity. There you go. Try doing that in confession. And see if the priest says, very good confession. Very good. I like that. That's the new apology, you know. It is conditional. Well, it even goes beyond, I didn't mean to offend you. It is now morphed into, if what I did offended you, I'm sorry for you being upset. I'm not admitting I did anything wrong. I'm not admitting I did anything offendable. I'm acknowledging that you overreacted. So maybe you should apologize to me, you know, because of what I did. You got upset at it, and I really don't deserve your upset because I wasn't intending to upset you, but you got upset, so you got a problem. It's not me. I didn't do anything wrong. You did wrong by getting upset over something that I had no intention of doing what you think I did. Uh-huh. It's the new apology. When we come back, we'll see what's on the list, and we'll talk about mother and daughter-in-law friction more than the original question. I'm Dr. Ray.
We'll return after these messages.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
I think the most important thing for me to remember is that I'm probably going to forget. Yeah, I got this idea. I think, I got to remember that. I don't have to write it down. All righty. Look back Friday on The Doctor Is In. Suzanne. Relating just an odd relationship matter. Would you believe it? Mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, friction.
It dawned on me after my daughter-in-law's outburst on Saturday. We were at the youngest child's birthday. He just turned 5. And her mother and her stepfather of many years was there. Her brother, all kinds of kids. There were probably 20 people in the house. And for the first time, I realized I'm an outsider. I am the mother-in-law. I am the dreaded, hated, stereotypical mother-in-law. She's always treated me like a friend and been gracious and loving. And now I find out in the text that we've exchanged to try to deal with this, that apparently she hates my guts, doesn't like anything about me, thinks I'm a horrible mother, except I gave birth to her husband. So how should I act as a mother-in-law? Am I supposed to do what Irma Bombeck says for the mother of the groom? And nobody but you and I know who Irma Bombeck is.
Easy, Suzanne, easy. Watch it there. Yes, I interrupted you. Sit up, shut up, and wear beige. That's right.
That's
okay.
Right.
It's not unusual for you to be schnookered like this in the sense that her superficial conduct towards you has been very pleasant. Well, what do you know? She seems to like me. We get along. No, we're just good. All the while, she's got these resentments brewing.
Yeah.
There probably were times that you gave your opinion that you thought, hey, I'm just giving it a helpful opinion about world events or religion or child rearing or anything. And you're thinking, well, just sharing. We have that kind of relationship. And she's thinking, shut up. I don't want to hear it. I don't like it. I don't agree with you. Just be quiet. Who asked you anyway?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of that. And that's a very, very common dynamic, which is mom-in-law says things that she thinks are pretty benign. I mean, how can you misinterpret this? How could you get upset over this? And the daughter-in-law is getting upset over this. So that's the first thing. Sometimes there's the whole religion aspect. You're just too religious, and I don't like the fact that you're so religious. And your son is not all that religious anymore because he's living with me, and we don't take religion like you do. That could be. Is that
a
possibility?
Actually, we're all Catholic.
Well, that doesn't
mean
anything.
My son and I are converts.
Well, that doesn't mean anything because it depends on how she lives her Catholic. You can call herself Catholic all she wants, but if she hates your guts, that's not very good Catholic. Now.
Okay.
Now, I have a book called Being a Grandparent, Just Like Being a Parent, Only Different. In the book, I had a mother-in-law, it's a Q&A book, write me exactly like you just said. My daughter-in-law, I have found out since that she just has all kinds of problems with me. There's just so much about me it came out she does not like. Whoo! You want to put them in alphabetical order. Now, I said, your only real option available is to go to her and apologize profusely. To say, I didn't realize that I was coming across that way. I'm sorry. It won't happen again. I will give you a commitment that I'm going to just work very hard at not doing whatever I did that you pointed out to me. Here's the problem with that, Suzanne. You're not wrong. Okay, you're not saying I'm a wretched person. You're simply saying how you interpreted everything I did, I'm sorry for. Now that takes a lot of humility, because I know you're thinking to yourself, come on. I mean, she's so prickly and she's so intolerant that I'm not even allowed to be human. I got that. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And given that, if what you're doing is you're just basically trying to do damage control. If she throws it back in your face, if in so many words she says, too bad, so sad. You are who you are, and I don't like who you are, no matter how much you apologize, and no matter how much you say you're going to try to be different, because I don't believe you. She may not say that, but that could be what she's thinking. Well, at least you can live with the satisfaction, I did what I could to try to fix this.
Is there any point or benefit to letting her tell me everything she hates about me?
Yes, there is. That's, yes. Yeah, say to her.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, please tell me what I have done that you find offensive or that were hurtful or that you didn't want to hear. Please tell me so I know in the future what kinds of things I need to keep an eye on. Don't say it in a way like, so I know in the future what kind of things you're prickly about. No, don't do that.
Right.
No.
Right.
Now, here's the thing too. And this is like in marital therapy. When these spouses come in and they point to their spouse and say, this is why this person's all wrong and this is why this person's all hard to live with. that really doesn't do a whole lot to get things better. What you're doing is you're going to your daughter-in-law and saying, for what I did, and you're leaving out for what you misinterpreted I did. You're just saying for what I did.
Right, right, right.
I'm sorry.
Because her perceptions are valid.
Well, in her mind, they are.
I may not agree, but they're valid, right?
And that's honest for you to say. That's a kind of a humble thing to say. Matter of fact, that's almost as humble as I am.
Her perceptions are valid. Now, that can mean a couple of things. Suzanne is saying, the way my daughter-in-law is looking at this, I don't agree with, but she has every right to look at it that way. It's kind of like, you know, your feelings are valid. Or she could be saying, there were times when I should have kept my mouth shut, when I shouldn't have said what I said. My experience is, in these relationships where you find out later that the individual was keeping up a pleasant front toward you, and then something happened, you either said something, there was some misunderstanding, there was some event, some circumstance, and the dam broke. All the stuff starts gushing out. All the things that you said or did that were hurtful or offensive or inappropriate or unacceptable or taken badly, as you look back on it, you didn't think so. And I find that all of us probably could admit to sometimes that we've done that. My wife is very good at pointing out to me, Ray, you shouldn't have said that. And I thought to myself, I was just kidding. I was just teasing. I was just having some fun. I was just showing the person that I'm just having a good time with them. Well, they didn't take it that way. So, I've made a rule. I don't stop saying things. I just make sure my wife is right next to me every time I open my mouth. Yeah, that's a good safety mechanism. There is a percentage for most of us that we say things that we probably have, if we would have thought about a little more, wouldn't have said them. And you never realize how insecure somebody might be to take those things in, to absorb them, and to have them build up. You might be able to shrug off a lot of what people say to you. You might be able to give them a benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to read their motives. They're probably just being clumsy, or they meant well and I took it wrong. So you give them a break. But if in fact they're not bound by this idea that a good Christian should not be easily offended. And it was interesting that Suzanne said, yeah, we're all Catholic. However, it sounds like, and again, I don't know what Suzanne said over the years, but it sounds like the daughter-in-law was building up offenses. St. Paul says that. He says, don't keep a record of offenses. But if you do, you're kind of gone against what our Lord wants you to do. You don't just say, well, you know, this is the 37th time they've done that. I marked the date and time. We're not supposed to do that as followers of Christ. We're just not. We might want to, and it's easy to do, but we're really not supposed to. What happens, and I got to tell you, this is not misogynist. This is not sexist. By far, the relationship most prone to this kind of friction is mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. Next is mother-daughter. Part of that is that mothers are generally more willing, more able to make guidance or comments about child-rearing, about living life better. Mothers do this. Dads are a little slower to do that, a little perhaps more reluctant, maybe a little more oblivious. I don't even notice it. The moms notice it. Mother-in-laws notice it. And the daughter or the daughter-in-law is more likely to take it in a way it was not intended. Or if it was intended that way, to hold on to it and not forget it. All of you have relatives in your life who say things, perhaps do things, that just really get to you. They irk you. And it's the repetition that gets you to the point where you want to just unload on them. You've had enough. The problem with that is, if this is someone in your inner circle, it's a close relative, it is your wife's, your daughter's husband, it is your sister, it is your brother, it is your mom. And these are people that you have to kind of have in your life. You don't want to write them off. It's easy enough to ignore the neighbor lady six houses down because you barely see her and she can be pretty obnoxious. You saw her at a backyard cookout and she's just not somebody you'd want to hang around with. You don't have to hang around with her. She's six houses down and your paths cross rarely. And you have the most curmudgeon-y mail carrier that anybody could have. So once every 12 days you happen to catch him for 1 minute at the mailbox, you can tolerate it. But if this is somebody right smack in the middle of your life, and they do this, they have a propensity to say things that just get to you, you better learn, as my mother used to say, let it go in one ear and out the other, which is pretty easy for me to do because there's not a whole lot stopping it. But that is a Christian response in a lot of ways. I don't know how Suzanne's daughter-in-law will react when she apologizes. Sound like she would. I don't know how she'll react. Some people say, oh, no, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything, which is a bunch of malarkey because they're upset at you. Some people stare at you as if to say, what are you saying? Some people reject your apology. Well, I know you may think you're sorry for that, but it's just something you do all the time. It's kind of a slap down. Apology is still the right thing to do in cases like that. I don't know what the percentage is when we apologize to someone close to us that we actually don't believe we were wrong. Have you ever had that? You're apologizing, but you're thinking to yourself, I'm not so sure that I meant anything wrong. I didn't mean to be hurtful. I didn't mean to be nasty. But I'll apologize anyway. Some people take an apology as an admission of wrong. In other words, if I apologize to you and I say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That was wrong of me. And I'm thinking to myself, it really wasn't wrong of me. And I don't know why you interpreted it the way you did, because I didn't mean anything by it. But I don't say any of that. I apologize. There's a part of me that thinks the other person is going to hear that I admit that I was as wrong as they think I was, when in fact I didn't think that. And in fact, I am apologizing just to smooth things over. That takes some hat in hand. It really does. But it's still the best way to do it. And remember, when you're dealing with somebody that's likely to take in things you say with a smiley face and then 2 years from now tell you in alphabetical order all the things you did wrong, you better realize to be a little more careful about what you say around them.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
The AP is now saying that news people cannot refer to pregnancy resource centers as pregnancy resource centers or crisis pregnancy centers. They have to refer to them as anti-abortion centers because we're misleading the public by saying that they're offering resources, apparently. It is about consistently putting forth a culture of death, do anything you want sexually, being extremely woke every time you turn around. This is more proof that all they care about is their own agenda. And they're doing this to their own demise. If you look at the ratings, for example, of CNN, if you look at the subscription rates, right, of various newspapers, whether it's online or still hard copy and in print, continuing to decrease. And yet they do not care because it's about the agenda.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah, we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the eight roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, no, Doc. I'm Dr. Ray. You're Robert. I got a few more tests for parents. This was sent to me by a dear woman in Poland. Very, very bright lady. She was talking about parenting tests. You know, are you ready to be a parent? Recruit a short friend to scream your name and pull on your arm while you go to the bathroom, take a shower, sleep, cook dinner, visit friends, drive, type, talk on the telephone, attend mass, and go about all of your daily business. Continue this for as long as you can keep your sanity. The parent fashion test. Buy one set of clothes in the heaviest weight sailcloth available. You will only be able to replace these clothes once every 10 years. For a special occasion, dye them a different color. Buy one pair of shoes. Wear them whenever you have to leave the house. Indoors, wear slippers or go barefoot. Wear any two socks you can find. Unmatched socks is the closest thing to a fashion statement that you will make for the rest of your parenthood. I personally take offense at this one because my kids have long since left the house and I dress like that. So what's the problem here? What is the problem? Okay, look back Friday here on The Doctor Is In. Let's go to Maria, who is an MD. Oh, no, that's Maria from Maryland.
We just recently found out, we meaning my sisters and I, just found out that one of our nieces' child is going by a different gender. And the school said the parents don't know.
And the school didn't tell
and
the parents.
So my sister, and I'm sure the school will not tell the parents.
Uh-huh. There are, by the way, Maria, last I looked, and I think it's higher now, there are approximately 4 million children going to schools where the schools would say, we will not tell the parents if the child says, I am in the wrong body.
Yes, and that's kind of what we don't know what to make of it. And I told my sister, well, don't say anything until we can pray about this, until we can, so we don't overreact or whatever. I mean, it could be something as minor as they're just being goofy, you know, to like what they're being taught.
How'd you find out?
Through that one, my sister works for the school system, and she happened to be in the same school that day, which she normally isn't. And she said, I think that's my niece. And they're like, well, such and such goes by this name now. And I'm like, ah. And we're like, okay, so she kind of asked me, what do I do? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Do we say anything to the mother that we are, you know, that we know about this? Or is it something that is just kind of, you know, you hope they find out and that they work it out?
Why would you hesitate to tell the mom about this kind of confusion in her daughter?
Well, that's just it. I don't want to be, like, say something and the person would be like, oh, she just uses that name just to be silly or whatever. I didn't want to appear being nosy or, though I think the family would be very receptive of a private conversation if that was the case.
It would seem like your sister, who is aware that you're niece's daughter wants to be called other things because she says, I am in fact claiming not to be a girl, that your sister would say, this isn't just, how old is the daughter? 12, 13, 11?
Middle school. So okay. I'm thinking eighth grade. That's probably 13, 14. Mm-hmm.
That's very common. The transgender claim is very much higher among girls now than boys. Mm-hmm. So given this, your sister would know if, in fact, this young lady is going through the school. And it isn't just a matter of, yeah, okay, I use this name to just get a little bit of attention or to be funny, but I don't really feel like I'm a boy. Your sister would know. But...
yeah.
But let's lay that aside for a second. If you go to your niece and you say, this is what's happening. We don't know what it means. I make no conclusions about your daughter, whatever she is saying, claiming, and why. Make no conclusions. But I thought, because the school won't tell you, that you might want to know.
Okay.
I would do that, sure. I think that your niece will be shook up, right? She'd be kind of rocked.
Yeah. Okay.
Alrighty, my dear. Thank you. If a child tells the school, I'm really wanting to cut myself. I haven't yet, but I know I'm gonna. Or if a child tells the school, I'm on the edge of a eating problem. I just think I'm way too fat, even though I weigh 91 pounds. I can't stand the looks of my body, and I'm pretty much going to slowly starve myself, but please don't tell my parents. Or they say, there's a guy that's, I think is really attractive, but he's 24. Don't tell my parents. I would think that the vast majority of schools would take it upon themselves to tell the parents that this child is doing something or thinking something that could have repercussions the child is not aware of or the child can't gauge or maybe coming on because of other reasons. So it's interesting, the rationale for this is you don't tell a parent because parents don't understand. Parents can be counted on to handle it as Neanderthals, and they will make it worse. That is the arrogant attitude. What would be a reason for not telling a parent? If the child says, please, please don't tell my parents would not understand, and they would have all kinds of problems with this, and they would discipline me, and they would give me all kinds of trouble. Well, the first thing you're doing is believing the child. As a guy that's worked with thousands of kids, you really got to make sure what the child is telling you reflects reality. Those of you who have 14-year-olds, you know what they think of you sometimes, and you're thinking to yourself, yes, they totally misperceive who I am and why I do what I do. So the school people, this is the height of arrogance, to step in and say,
will protect you from your parents. They don't need to know. I think until more parents start pushing their rights to say, whether you agree with me, whether you believe what I'm doing is in line with what you think or not, that is my child. And I certainly have my own child's best interests at heart more than you do. Next year, this child will be gone from your class, but this child lives in my home. Yeah, underlying that is, we're not going to tell because we're going to protect you from your parents. Mm-hmm. Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
What do we mean when we say the church is the body of Christ? From the very beginning, Jesus shared with his apostles his mission, his joys and sufferings, and the mystery of the kingdom. The Catholic Catechism points out that Jesus indicated the intimacy of his union with his followers when he said, "I am the vine, you are the branches. Abide in me, and I in you." When Jesus' visible presence was taken away from the apostles, they were not orphaned. Jesus sent them his Spirit. As a result, says the Catechism, communion with Christ is even more intense. Jesus mystically constitutes as his body all those brethren called together from every nation. The church is not only gathered around Christ, she is united in him, in his body. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The Wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows, and I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know, my uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Another parent test, the driving test. Borrow a minivan. Take a rake. Scrape it down the side of that van. Back up into two or three things, putting appropriate dents in it. Get three monkeys, put them in the far back, fold-down seat. Give each monkey one of the following: a box of matches, an aerosol can of spray paint, a sharp stick. Take the car onto the highway in the heavy traffic, maintaining speed and keeping one hand on the steering wheel. Keep the monkeys from doing any damage to the car, to each other, or passing automobiles without yourself violating any rules of the road, without stopping the car, cursing, or getting into an accident. If you can do that, you can have children in your car. Look back Friday, see what we got here. Speaking of cars, Joan from Pennsylvania has a granddaughter. Afraid of the car. You might say your little granddaughter gets anxious having to travel in a car.
She gets more than anxious. She refuses to go in a car.
Is that right?
Yes.
So wait, just recently?
Yeah, just recently that she's been able to maybe get in the car and go for a 10-minute drive to get to the swimming pool in the area where she lives.
Well, she wants to go to the swimming pool.
Yes, and she wants to go a lot pieces. But when she gets in that car, she just...
What does she do?
Gets panic and says, I don't want to go. I got to get out of the car. And she goes back into the, you know, the apartment and just stays there.
How long she been doing this?
Over 2 years.
Oh! So they have been essentially, unwittingly, and with all good intentions, I don't want to say feeding into this, but cooperating in it.
To a point, yes. Her mother is of the opinion that she shouldn't be forced physically to doing anything. Dad says I would put her in the car and just make her get over it, but being that the mother and the father are divorced and do not live together, the father does not have a whole lot of options. He gets to see her every 2 weeks.
So when he sees her, does she travel in the car with him?
She will go with him, and that's just recently, but not real far. So bottom line to that is he always has to go there, and she never gets to go to his house, which is 2 hours away. And she did at the beginning. She loved going there. They did a lot of things together. She has a friend in the neighborhood there. But she just suddenly got into this panic attack that she wouldn't get in the car and she won't leave the house where her mother is.
You want me to give you bad news?
I guess I gotta hear it.
If the mother is unwilling to respond to this in a better way, then you can't do a thing.
That's what I figured.
Let me give you some general observations here, Joan. Little kids get better at getting over their little anxiety reactions. Okay, I shouldn't say little anxiety reactions. At getting over their anxiety reactions when the adults around them help them simply float through the anxiety. That's how you defeat anxiety. You float through it. You realize it's not going to hurt you. So what has happened is when this little one, back when she was six, for whatever the reason, and it, by the way, Joan, that's not unusual for little kids, particularly girls, will have some kind of anxiety reaction in a certain situation that seems inexplicable. You don't know where it came from. You don't know why. They just got something in their head. And so they resist it. And the parent, like you said about your, I assume this is your daughter, said, she doesn't believe to, quote-unquote, force her.
Yeah, well,
daughter-in-law. So what has happened? Oh, yeah. She really not going to want to hear from you.
So, that's right.
So given that, they simply say, well, all right, this is anxiety, and we don't want to make it worse, so what we'll do is we'll make it worse. Now, they aren't going to say that, and they don't realize that's what they're doing, but that is what they're doing. They're making it worse. It isn't a matter of, all right, we're going to put you in the car, we're going to strap you in the car, kid, and you're going to sweat blood. No, no, it's not that at all. It's, honey, you're going to feel real uncomfortable. It's not going to hurt you. You're going to be fine. And within about 5 minutes, it's going to go away. Now, that's the reality. But they won't do that. So as long as they won't do that, what happens, Joan, and I'm working on a book on anxiety right now. It's called The Anxiety Trick. What happens is every time that little girl is permitted to get out of that car, they make the anxiety stronger because she gets reinforced. I'm anxious. I don't feel comfortable. I get out of the car. I feel better. Ah, good. So that becomes her main response. That's her go-to response. Get out. But all that does is it makes it worse. Now, if somehow your daughter-in-law could be convinced that she's not psychologically harming her child by saying, honey, I'm sitting here, we're going to drive around the block, and we're going to show you the anxiety is going to go away. Because in the old days, that's how they used to handle anxiety. They basically said, okay, well, we'll slowly expose you inch by inch to the feared situations. We'll get your anxiety to calm down, and then we'll go a little farther and whatever we have to do and whatever exposure we have to do. But until your daughter-in-law gets to that point, Joan, what can happen here is that the little girl, and this is kind of sad, really, because there's no way this little girl should have to live like that. So this
she's getting frustrated with herself.
Sure, I could see it. And then what'll happen is, mom, and I don't know what your daughter-in-law is like, so I can't individually say anything about your daughter-in-law. But in general, at some point, most parents get to the place where they say, I can't live like this. We're not going to do this. And then they're mad, and then they're frustrated. And then what happens is they, quote-unquote, go get therapy for the little girl, and the therapy, by and large, doesn't work. Because it's away from the situation. Oh boy, so many levels to this. Did you notice a key line, and I didn't chase it in the original call, that Grandma said? The little girl's starting to refuse to go anywhere. In other words, she's becoming housebound. The old fancy name for that, of course, is agoraphobia, Greek word meaning fear of the marketplace. Maybe you know people like that. Their anxieties spread so badly that the only place they can find any real security is at home. That's what's happening to the little girl. It isn't so much the car alone that is the anxiety. Now it's generalizing to where that car could go. That's what's really sad here. That is what's really, really sad. The key to breaking anxiety's grip, and I'm speaking to all of you now because anxiety is a number one symptom that brings people to therapy. It will not harm you. Yes, in a uncommon number of cases, there may be something underlying it physically, and if you want to confirm it, you get a medical exam or... Many people go to the emergency room and they find out, no, there's nothing we can find. Most of the time, an anxiety reaction is an anxiety reaction. Your fight or flight response is going a little haywire when there's no danger. That fight or flight response is there for danger. It's a protective mechanism. God put it in us. It's a safeguard. Everything flares. We do what we have to survive. Well, if that thing goes off, when there is no danger. There's no danger getting into that car for that little girl. I should have asked her name, but just from the way Grandma was talking, my guess is she's somewhere between 7 and 10. That car's no danger. But in the little girl's mind, the reaction of her body's the exact same as if there were a dangerous situation confronting her. So the key to eliminating anxiety, really of any type, is to not fight it, not grit your teeth. It's to flow through it, to realize what it is. It's just anxiety. Dr. A, it's not just anxiety. This is a horrible feeling. Part of what makes it so horrible is that you're afraid of it. Well, of course I'm afraid of it. It's anxiety. No, what I mean is, the arousal that you're feeling is fueled by a lack of understanding of what it is. What is wrong with me? Why is this happening? What is going on in my body? And that just fuels it. Like a microphone placed too near its speaker. It forms a feedback loop. One feeds upon the other until screech. And that's what happens with the anxiety. I believe this little girl could relatively quickly get over this if they explained it to her and said, honey, we're not going to let you run off. That's what mother's been doing for 2 years. Mother has solidified that anxiety. That anxiety is rooted. And it's interesting because the daughter now won't get in the car with dad to drive to his house. Interesting. So what we're doing is we're being so kind that we're causing all kinds of problems. One quick anecdote. We adopted my son and daughter when they were 4. My little daughter, Joanna, we were told by the foster parents, Joanna gets car sick. We have to pull over. We always pull over when she gets car sick. And she says she's going to throw up. She said she feels terrible. We have to pull over. We got into the car to go to Mass, me and JoJo. And JoJo said, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to be sick. And I said, JoJo, honey,
if you get sick, what are you going to do? I'm going to throw up. Okay, but if you throw up, you're going to throw up on your dress, and your dress is really pretty. My dress a putty? Yeah, honey, it's really, really putty. Oh, I don't throw up on my dress. I know you don't want to throw up in your dress, so we're just going to drive, and I don't think you're going to throw up. And a couple minutes later, it passed, as it always does, by the way. Anxiety always passes. And I never had that problem again. 2.5 years of the foster parents pulling over because of her car sickness. And we cured it in one trial. All right, I'm way past break.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. Join us on the next Good News Cruise from January 5th to 11th on the Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas. You'll be joined by Father Michael Schmitz, Teresa Tamio, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and many more speakers. Cabins are selling fast, so be sure to book your spot now. Faith and fun on the sea and in the sun. There's no topping that. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more. Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Doctor is in. Look Back Friday, the only radio program in all of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network with the broadcast delay set because of the host. Normally, they set a broadcast delay of about 6-8 seconds because callers, they call in, they say something totally inappropriate. It doesn't get on the air because there's a 6-8 second delay between what goes on the air and what they say. Well, I've been informed by the folks at EWTN that we have a broadcast delay on this program for 56 minutes. I said, well, that's the whole show. They said, what's your point, Ray? So essentially, they could just eliminate my whole show at the end of the show. A couple more comments. And this is highly controversial. I probably shouldn't take it on with 2 minutes left. When kids have that kind of anxiety, nobody can make an adult face their anxiety and float through it so that they ultimately conquer it. Nobody can make an adult do that. An adult can show a child that's what'll happen. That you won't have anything horrible befall you. And it will pass. So if the parents did that, if they said, you know what, honey, we were going to go somewhere, but now because you refuse to get in the car. But Dr. Ray, she's not refusing. She's anxious. Yes and no. There's always a blend with little kids. Is an anxiety which sometimes blends, I shouldn't say always, sometimes blends with resistance. The feeling's uncomfortable, therefore I'm going to resist. And then the longer it goes on, the resistance component gains momentum. If mom would say, you know what, honey, we got to go to mass and you're going to get in the car. And if you don't, the rest of the day you have no privileges at all. Now, if mom does that, there's a very good chance the little girl will say, okay, whatever it is that I'm feeling, I'm going to endure because I don't want to go a whole day without privileges in the future after she experiences that a few times. Dr. Ray, you can't discipline an anxiety response. You're not really disciplining the anxiety response. What you're saying is, I want to do what I can to leverage you to get into this situation where you will see that nothing bad will happen to you. It's a motivation thing. Nobody can do that with grown-ups. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. My producer man, Andrew Krucek. I appreciate it so very, very much. Walk with God. That is, or should be, an anxiety-free walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.